Welcome to Federal Insights for April, sponsored by Akamai.
Talking about Zero Trust is easier than implementing it. Some agencies are managing to shift to the Zero Trust model, though. Tom Temin here, and thanks for joining me. For more about that work, Federal News Network's Jason Miller spoke with Mark Bunn, Program Manager for the Trusted Internet Connection Project, or TIC, at the Homeland Security Department's Federal Network Resilience Office.
Zero Trust is the end goal that we're trying to get to, and because it is such a buzzword, we do try to avoid it because it's misunderstood in many different areas. So currently what we're looking at is you have an accreditation boundary, which is quite large for an agency. Sometimes they'll call it general support systems, where it takes up the entire agency as a single trust entity. And what we're saying is, that's really not the entire crown jewels. Your crown jewels aren't scattered throughout your house. You really need to focus in. And so the first step of that was with the HVA program, identifying what the high-value assets are and where they are and what they are. A natural transition to that now is how do you protect those? So we do have other programs at CISA that are doing that piece. And our piece is specifically on the communications between those different trust zones and being able to capture any cyber relevant information that's inside of that traffic.
You use the term trust zone. What does that mean? Help me define that, because I think people hear it and be like, well, I trust all my network. And if you don't trust your network, isn't that a bigger problem? So what's a trust zone?
Yeah, so a trust zone is a new term and concept. One of the things we looked at Trusted Internet Connections Program is what does each of those words mean, and why are we using it in the way that we are? And one of the things we really identified early on was the term trust itself. We didn't have a real good criteria and information around that. So that's what we're doing with TIC 3, is really defining what is that criteria of trust in terms of risk management. And the cybersecurity framework, there's a specific level of trust and specific things that you need to do to protect data, and how does this relate to the TIC program itself? So that's really what we're looking at, is how do we get that narrowed down? It could be a physical, a virtual, but the trust zone itself is a concept. It's not a physical network. And so today it's pretty wide, and our idea is as we get further into the future, it'll get smaller and smaller.
And the reason why the trust zone is pretty wide is because you have on-prem, you have cloud, you have mobile, you have all these pieces and parts that kind of make up what's inside that zone. And even for the TIC policy, for instance, I know that for a long time that was focused on the network, the interaction between, you know, if you will, the private and the public parts of the agency. But with the move to a hybrid cloud, with the changing kind of boundaries, as people like to call it, that's why you guys are kind of refocused on that trust zone issue.
Exactly right. So what you have with a traditional network is you do have a very clear boundary between this is where my agency stops and this is where the internet begins. This is where my agency stops and Internet 2 begins, or other networks begin. When we start talking about hybrid clouds specifically, those boundaries go away. We start talking about software as a service as being an internal system. Those boundaries go away again. And the big question we had is, well, if the boundary's gone away, does the need to have a boundary-focused program go away? And what we've discovered through interviews both with the private sector and agencies is that, no, there's still requirements there. There's still things that need to be protected, and there's still things that we care about from a cybersecurity standpoint.
And that's a great segue to the TIC program. But before I go there, I just connect the dots for me, because one thing about Zero Trust and this idea, this concept that's kind of growing, is that's not just one technology, but it's all the pieces that will make up Zero Trust. Eventually, TIC is one big piece of it, but you also have CDM and some other Einstein. How is DHS kind of viewing all those pieces so they all come together under this Zero Trust umbrella?
So I really wouldn't say a Zero Trust umbrella even. So there's a number of concepts that are out there. As far as what CISA's approach is going to be to that, it's probably a little soon for me to answer that kind of question.
Fair enough. Something to follow up with your folks later on. Let's talk a little bit about TIC now. The TIC 3 policy, the draft is out. I know Federal CIO Suzette Kent said the final policy is going to be out very soon, the ubiquitous soon from OMB, of course. Talk a little bit about some thoughts behind that. And as you guys were putting it together, one of the big areas that you wanted to focus on was come up with these use cases. And talk about how you went to develop these different use cases. And maybe start with a little refresher. What were some of those use cases?
Oh, certainly. So the first use case, the most obvious one, is the traditional TIC itself. From there, you see things like email as a service. You see things like remote access, remote users, and things like that. The real big piece of it is what you see in our initial use cases are really what are agencies using the most of. So we look at the FedRAMP data that GSA has on their website out in the public, and we said, okay, what are the top technologies that agencies are using now? What's the biggest bang for the buck? Let's start with those initially, and then as agencies need additional use cases, we'll work on those.
And I know some people have pointed out, well, what about this or what about that? And you guys have some other use cases that are going to come later. Do you have a long list, and what would be some of those that would maybe toward the top?
Platform as a service it would be towards the top of that list. So there's two types of use cases. There are ones that are very, very agnostic in general, just like the traditional TIC use case itself. So you'll see infrastructure as a service, obviously software as a service, and platform as a service. So you'll see those service models listed just to have a real general. As far as other types of use cases, we actually keep that as open-ended as possible. So we want to do what's most important for most of the agencies most of the time. How about that? So hitting the most important pieces first, the best data we could find out there was in GSA's FedRAMP program to say, okay, here's what agencies are using, here's who's using the most, and let's start with those to get more specific with technologies. So that way we can say these security capabilities, here's the best way to implement that if you're using this specific provider's email as a service offering.
In many reasons, the use cases are there to give people that creativity, because I know there's some concern that, well, we just have to throw out the whole baby in the bathwater and start new. And the idea is, because agencies will be in this hybrid environment, they'll have on-prem, they'll have off-prem, they'll have cloud, they'll have mobility. What DHS seems to be doing is saying, we understand that the breadth, if you will, has just grown and grown and grown, and we want to make sure that we can help agencies understand what they have to protect and how they protect it. And talk maybe a little bit about, if you can, that thinking of what went into kind of how do we make as many people happy as we can.
Yeah, so there's two pieces to it. So the first part is the agency's risk perspective, and that is the part that we can't really tell the agency what their risk thresholds are. That's something for them to determine within their own mission. So that is definitely a piece of the challenge. But the second piece of that is actually there's a federal enterprise, and the federal enterprise has a minimum level of risk that it can afford. We've seen that with many incidents in the past where that threshold may have been exceeded in some way. And so we really want to make sure that we establish a good, solid baseline for agencies to be supported. We don't want them to be so creative that they're dancing naked in the hailstorm.
It's a great vision that we all have in our minds. Give me the other piece of this is the architecture. For years, TIC really focused on the TIC architecture. What's the TIC architecture? What's the architecture reference model? And that is still there, but it's less, if you will, in the forefront of the TIC effort, and it's more kind of fun, I'll say, behind the scenes a little bit. Can you talk about the changes of the TIC architecture or how that relates back to this trust zone / use cases?
Absolutely. So the TIC is dead. Long live the TIC. And one of the big questions that we had is, should we even still call TickTick? Should we change the name because we're changing it so much? The real big difference is, instead of us dictating, here's that that physical environment looks like, here's what that network looks like, we're saying, here's the concepts. Here's what the trust zones are, and here's the capabilities you need to put when you're going from a high trust to a low trust environment or vice versa.
And a big part of that also is that you want the architecture to be agnostic. You want to, it's smaller. The reference architecture is a little bit smaller. And really the end is what risks are you facing in which part of your environment, and then make a decision. So it's less about put MTIPs here or put this type of software there. It's really asking agencies to think a lot differently.
Exactly. So particularly with security capabilities, we want those capabilities to be implemented where they get the most bang for the buck, and that's not always at the gateway. The example we usually use is DLP. When you're looking at gateway traffic, it's all encrypted. DLP doesn't provide a lot of value at that stage. For most agencies, they find deploying that at the endpoint or in the cloud environment gets them a lot more bang for the buck because they're not just looking at a bunch of encrypted data.
That's Mark Bunn, the program manager of the Trusted Internet Connection at the Homeland Security Department's Federal Network Resilience Office, speaking with Federal News Network's Jason Miller. Hear more of this interview after a quick break. I'm Tom Temin.
The network perimeter has traditionally defined the boundaries of security, but today, agencies need protection wherever applications, data, users, and devices are, both on and off network. Agencies should be doubling down with a zero-trust approach to security. This is Randy Wood, Vice President, U.S. Public Sector for Akamai. Akamai is a leader in mitigating malware, bot, and DDoS attacks and is trusted by all branches of the military and 14 cabinet-level agencies.
Learn more at akamai.com/zero-trust. That's A-K-A-M-A-I.
What's the end game to zero-trust networks? How do you prioritize what data needs protection first? Mark Bunn, Program Manager of the Trusted Internet Connection Project, or TIC, at the Homeland Security Department's Federal Network Resilience Office, spoke with Federal News Network's Jason Miller about how his team answered some of these questions.
It is a continuation of a mission, and the mission hasn't changed. This is literally that the technology around it has changed, and so we have to approach things in a different way. So that's really the paradigm shift when we say, oh, things are totally different. The only thing that's really different is we found ourselves, we were once fish swimming in water, and now all of a sudden we're in the air. We need to figure out what wings are.
And is that reason is because of things like the cloud and the big push for mobility devices? Is that, we know the cloud has been driving the changes to TIC, but what else is driving this idea of zero of trust zones?
A number of technologies. So mesh networking, some of the advancements that we see in Internet 2. Hopefully that will come about. Some of the things that we see in IPv6, as well as AI and neural nets and how those are set up and how containment might be an important issue in the future.
And the other piece of this is, as agencies begin to roll out the TIC, new TIC policy, what's DHS's role going to be to help them to kind of support those new needs or the understanding of the use cases?
The same as it has been. So we're definitely here to assist agencies. The example we used to always give is we're the firefighters, not the police. So we're definitely here to help. We want to make sure that the houses that they have are safe and not catching fire, obviously in the cybersecurity world. So that's definitely our primary focus, not just large agencies and not just the CFO Act agencies, but particularly the non-CFO Act agencies that have very unique and specific missions.
When the new policy comes out, you guys are going to get probably a ton of questions. You're going to get a lot of vendor interest. Do you have plans yet for a communication plan? Have you guys started talking about what the how to ensure people know where to find information, but also if they have questions, if they have, you know, where can they go to kind of find out more information besides the DHS and CISA website, of course?
At this point, I would say stay tuned.
Okay. So something to we can follow up on later. I guess the last piece of this, and which I think is part of the discussion, is when agencies, do you have examples or do you have any current use cases that you can point agencies toward? And if you don't want to mention them specifically, I understand that, like a specific agency, but are there use cases out there that there are some agencies that are ahead of the curve right now?
So the most important piece of that is each agency really does have different elements of risk that they have to be concerned with. So I really wouldn't encourage one agency to completely pattern themselves after another. I wouldn't specifically tell the DOJ to do everything like the Small Business Administration does, because they have very different missions. And it's something that they have to look at, their mission first. What's the most important thing? What are we trying to accomplish? How are we good stewards of the taxpayer dollar? And now how does TIC support that?
And on the other hand, the vendors are also going to be very interested in this. What's the message to vendors? Because they're going, how can we support this? How can we? And as you and I know, this concept of zero trust networking, the zero trust network is a big buzzword. So what's your message? What's the DHS system message to vendors as this TIC policy and 3.0 and zero trust idea rolls out?
Engage with a customer agency to get them to recommend and actually write up a proposal for a pilot with us. We definitely want to pilot with agencies who are working with these different vendors' products, because there are millions of vendors out there. obviously at this stage, we can't sit down with each and every vendor and come up with a use case for each vendor. But we are working with agencies specifically closely through the pilot process that's laid out in the policy. And so we definitely want to encourage agencies, to work with us if they have something that they're doing that's new and unique, or if there's something in current TIC policy that's hindering them in some way, we definitely want them to pilot.
Mark Bunn is program manager of the Trusted Internet Connection Project at the Homeland Security Department's Federal Network Resilience Office. Speaking with Federal News Network's Jason Miller. You can find this entire interview online at federalnewsnetwork.com. Click Federal Insights. Up next, where does Zero Trust fit into Homeland Security's overall IT and cybersecurity modernization mission? I'm Tom Temin.
Government is facing more cyber attacks than ever before. The traditional perimeter no longer exists. There is no inside or outside when it comes to detecting, defending, and deterring attacks. With every agency at risk, IT departments should be doubling down with a zero trust approach to security. Akamai is a leader in mitigating malware, bot, and DDoS attacks and is trusted by all branches of the military and 14 cabinet-level agencies. To mitigate your next attack, visit akamai.com/zero trust. akamai.com/zero trust.
Building zero trust into networks is on agencies' to-do list as they modernize. Tom Temin here, and thanks for joining me. The Homeland Security Department is one source of guidance in zero trust. Jeanette Manfra is Assistant Director for Cybersecurity at the DHS Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. At a recent briefing, Federal News Network's Jason Miller asked Manfra about zero trust and federal modernization efforts.
I think with our approach throughout the last couple of years, really, and across the board on IT, not just security, modernizing all of our infrastructure, and it's really giving us an opportunity to think about how the government architects its systems differently. And so whether you're talking about cloud deployments or modernizing your data center internal, the idea of there are places where you're just never going to you're going to have more trust in some places than in others, and being able to operate in a place where, whether you call it a trust zone or a zero trust network, but being able to build those architectures and those systems build what I like what Mark called a trust zone, and knowing you have certain elements in place to achieve that trust. And so that's kind of what we're thinking. You know, if you're thinking about systems where they have to be open by their very nature in order to do their job, in order to support your function, you're going to have a different approach than a system that can be completely closed off and nobody needs to be able to access it from the public internet. So different approaches.
Do you get a sense that as you guys are putting together these different tools and helping agencies access the different tools, that's the long-term end result? I mean, again, if we talk about this in 3 years, 5 years from now, zero trust, trust zones will be a more common phrase. Is CDM, TIC, again, Einstein, all the other pieces and parts are all pieces to that framework?
Yeah, I do think it will be a more common phrase. I think it's picking up some more. I think To me, that's more an architecture sort of question and design thinking, which we are trying to push that more as well. A lot of our systems have been developed, you know, different. One part was developed for one thing, and then someday somebody decided to connect it to something else, and so there's been a lot of really great work in some agencies around thinking about enterprise architecture, thinking about the business processes. How does the technology support the business process? And so we want to add security as a part of that conversation, and there's some solutions that the concept of a trust zone or zero trust network, that's where it makes sense, and it in fact makes a lot of sense. And there's other areas where they may not necessarily have to go down that design route, but I do think that there's a lot of promise in that concept.
You brought up one of my favorite topics, architecture, so I'll have to nerd out on you for a second. But the GovCar approach, yes. that effort, can you just give us an update of where that is and how that's kind of leading you or leading agencies down a path of understanding their architecture and then potentially in long term creating those trust zones?
Mm-hmm. Sure. For those who may not know, DoD started with a similar concept, and it was the idea of taking the MITRE ATT&CK framework and using that to assess your capabilities and to see sort of how do your capabilities stack up. And so we looked internally and started just at our own internal systems, and you know, where is the National Cyber Protection System or the Einstein part of that? How does that stack up against those threats? How well are we covered there? How does CDM stack up against it? And then we, once we completed those first couple of spins and looking some of our internal capabilities, we started looking at, what would a notional cloud architecture look like and how could that stack up? Where might there be some gaps in that? And so what we're looking at as going forward is, as we kind of went through each of these spins, assessing each of these either an architecture an existing capability, the next step for us is looking at what are the right material and non-material solutions to cover down on gaps. So do we need to deploy a technology or do we need to issue a policy like a directive to cover down on a gap? You know, we haven't done an assessment against a zero trust architecture. That's a good idea, and maybe something that we'll consider. But you know, I would go back to before is that the concept of trust zones being a part of any notional architecture as you build out throughout the entire agency or even just your piece of it. I would encourage people to think about that as a part of their deployments.
Jeanette Manfra is Assistant Director for Cybersecurity at the Homeland Security Department's Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. Speaking with Federal News Network's Jason Miller. Find this entire episode online at federalnewsnetwork.com. Click Federal Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights for April, sponsored by Akamai on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network.
Government is facing more cyber attacks than ever before. The traditional perimeter no longer exists. There is no inside or outside when it comes to detecting, defending, and deterring attacks. With every agency at risk, IT departments should be doubling down with a zero-trust approach to security. Akamai is a leader in mitigating malware, bot, and DDoS attacks and is trusted by all branches of the military and 14 cabinet-level agencies. To mitigate your next attack, visit akamai.com/zero-trust. akamai.com/zero-trust.
Did you know that women pilots represent just 6% of all pilots? Women Can Fly wants to change that by introducing girls to career opportunities and sharing the fun and fellowship of general aviation. Come out Saturday, June 22nd to Shannon Airport in Fredericksburg or Saturday, June 29th to the Warrenton Fauquier Airport to take a free flight, meet pilots, and learn more about flying. Women Can Fly is a volunteer organization whose mission it is to promote women of all ages to fly. Register at womencanfly.com.
If you enjoy fine food and wine, the folks at the Code of Support Foundation are hosting their 5th annual Toast to Our Troops Gala, Friday, April 26th at the Ronald Reagan Building here in Washington. The gala features premier wine tasting, live jazz, and a three-course dinner prepared by celebrity chef Robert Irvine and co-MC Tommy McFly, host on the Tommy Show app. The Code of Support Foundation is a veteran support organization providing critical case coordination services to troops, veterans, and families in crisis. More at codeofsupport.org.